Hi, I'm Mac.
Hi, I'm Abigail.
And this is Unsubs. This is the podcast where we recap, rate, and review all 324 episodes of Criminal Minds. And today we're talking Season 5, Episode 10, The Slave of Duty.
Weird title.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't really either. I have ideas. I have thoughts.
Ooh,
we'll unpack it later.
I have a fun fact.
Go.
I started watching Bridgerton.
Oh my god, okay. I've seen the season one and most of season two, but not all of it.
I fucking love it. I know this podcast previously came out with a so-so lukewarm verdict of it, but listen, I love all that masterpiece bullshit where he's like, I can't marry you because of your station. And she's like, but I'm smart. And then I'm like, oh my god, maybe they really can be together. So I love it. I fucking love it. I would let the Duke stomp on my face.
Wait, have you seen season two as well?
Yes, I'm almost to the end of season two.
I should finish it.
Yeah, the Viscount is so fucking hot. I cannot deal with it. I've got two episodes left. I've been waiting for my opportunity to like watch them uninterrupted. This is how much I love the show. It's one of those like phone on notification silenced on phone television shows for me.
Do not disturb experience.
I fucking put the do not disturb on because I'm like, I don't want anyone to sully my fucking experience.
That's me with you.
So that's my fun fact. I'm coming out in favor of Bridgerton. I know you were not a big fan, but it is right up my alley.
I enjoyed it. It's just that the music drives me insane.
Don't even get me started with the fucking music. For those that don't know, they do like classical covers.
It's the Vitamin String Quartet, whose YouTube channel I was really into when I was in high school. They did a Lady Gaga like 20-minute medley mashup with a whole like acting experience going on. Loved that shit.
Yeah, they do popular songs in instrumental classical presentations, like Call Me Maybe. What's the one with like Dancing on My Own?
I think we should just, like, when this episode comes out, we should put, like, on our Instagram a picture of the episode and then a picture from Bridgerton just to, like, shake things up and see how our fans react. Our listeners react.
Fans. Oh, my God. They have fans in Bridgerton, Abigail.
God, I just...
What's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I decided, I was listening to an audiobook and it was fine. I just like, it took me forever to get through it. And I was like, right now I'm feeling quantity over quality. And that wasn't like a knock at the book itself. Like it just wasn't my personal like super, it just wasn't very suspenseful and I wanted suspense. So I decided to remedy this by like listening to audiobooks of like all of my favorite childhood like fantasy novels and stuff.
I love it. Oh my god.
And I am suddenly the fastest audiobook listener in the world.
Like, getting all those Audible badges.
We're not going to take into consideration the fact that a lot of these books are like 3 hours to listen to or like 5 hours to listen to because they're really short because they're like youth books. It's actually been really great. And it's like weirdly like very affirming of like who I am as a person. It's like, oh, like, you know, it's like I still like this book and I can identify why it resonated with me at the ages in which I originally read them. And I just think that's really nice.
I love that. I'm going to do that too. That's a great idea.
We sounding okay?
I think so.
All right. I'm like fully lounging and getting cozy. So.
All right. Well, I am in a chair and you are in your bed. So.
Yes, I'm on my bed, but I have my own. I have one of those, like, big body pillows with, like, the armrests. So I have one of those, so I'm still somewhat erect, but, like, not totally horizontal.
God, well, live your life, queen. You gotta read this one. I'm gonna share the rating criteria. We rate each episode on a scale of 1 to 100. We've got 5 different categories. Each category can get a total of 20 points. Those categories are criminal / serial killer, character development / character arcs, forensic / context, script writing, and background characters.
And I'm going to tell you all that we are in no way, shape, or form professionally associated with Criminal Minds or any of the intellectual property therein. We have a listener submission.
Oh, I forgot. Yes, it's that time again. It's time for listener thoughts.
Listener thoughts. THOTS.
Hiya, baby.
Hey, baby girl. We need to talk.
PG or NC-17?
You're on speakerphone.
I charge extra for groups.
So this is from Madison. Thanks for writing in, Madison. And she's fucking coming in clutch with some details about season 4, episode 15, Zoe's Reprise.
Which was a great episode.
Great episode. And remember how horned up we were for the really sexy unsub?
Well.
I've got some bad news.
Sometimes the heart goes out to something it just shouldn't go out to.
Well, we'll get into it. We'll do a little. We're going to give you a short little deep dive. But we today are speaking about Johnny Lewis. He is an alleged killer, which we didn't know. In real life. So I just wanted to share, because I was like, I had no idea about this, because we don't, when we watch episodes, we try to just keep the illusion going. In October of 2011, he suffered head injuries from a high-speed motorcycle accident. He was on Sons of Anarchy. And though an MRI was recommended and his father scheduled MRI tests, he actually refused them. And he refused medical care. So he had a head injury that then caused psychiatric problems. And his whole family and his friends encouraged him to seek treatment, and he refused. So he was in and out of rehab and just bad stuff. And ultimately it culminated in 2012 where he supposedly murdered his landlady, who was 81 years old, and then jumped or fell off a roof and died.
Yeah, also weird fact, he dated Katy Perry.
Oh my God, Katy girl, come on the podcast.
Yeah, he dated her for a year.
It's kind of hard because when it's an adult, grown-ass man, how are you going to tell them how to live their lives? But it's clear that he had like some serious mental illness and mental difficulties stemming from this accident that was never addressed.
if you're able to, seek medical care if you have a traumatic head injury, because there are actually more and more studies coming out of linking head injuries to violent behavior.
We do research, but obviously we're not scouring pages. And if we don't know about something, we don't know. We're going to call them sexy and then continue to call them sexy. So thank you so much, Madison, for sharing.
Hiya, baby.
Hey, baby girl. We need to talk.
PG or NC-17?
You're on speakerphone.
I charge extra for groups.
So this is season 5, episode 10, The Slave of Duty. Just a little recap. We did see Haley Hotch McFreaking die in the last episode. So the episode opens with Hotch adjusting his and little baby Jack's tie. It is raining, of course. There is some remorseful, sad, morose music. And the scene cuts and we see Morgan and the others from the BAU team walking in a funeral procession, and both Rossi and Morgan are carrying the casket. Which makes sense. However, isn't that usually carried by people who are like close to the deceased rather than close to the deceased spouse?
Also, where's her mother in all of this? The mother she supposedly fucked up by calling.
Where is the rest of her family?
Mrs. Haley Hotchner's mother.
Where are her friends? So we get a voiceover of Hotch's words from the ceremony. He talks about how much they both loved Jack. The team looks much more upset about all of this than Hotch does because they're crying. Whereas Thomas Gibson is not giving us the range he did in the last episode. And then he's like, you know what? Here's a quote from the Pirates of Penzance.
But there was a reason for that, though.
Because that was the show they met, they were doing in high school or whatever when they met. So it makes sense, but it also is like if you watch this episode without knowing, like, the rest of what happened, I'm like, pirate. Okay.
I mean, it has been, like, multiple seasons since we learned that. So that's, like, a little, I don't know, like, what do they call it? Like, a little
deep cut? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fucking deep cut. But also, like, if you didn't remember, you'd be like, what the fuck? Is the Pirates of Penzance.
I met Haley at the tryouts of our high school's production of The Pirates of Penzance. I found our copy of the play, and I was looking through it the other night, and I came upon a passage that seemed appropriate for this moment. Oh, dry the glistening tear that dews that martial cheek. Thy loving children hear, in them thy comfort seek. With sympathetic care, their arms around thee creep. For oh, they cannot bear to see their father weep.
So we cut away from the funeral, and then we see the team at like a really lavish reception. And Rossi tells Hotch to, like, you know, go get some air. So the two of them step outside and leave. At a table, the rest of the team is sitting around and chatting. And Prentice is like, what are we supposed to do now without Hotch? And Morgan is like, don't worry, Hotch is going to come back.
Yeah, also, like, what you said initially is really bothering me. If Haley cares so much about her own mother that she's going to call her mother while in witness protection, clearly her mother is an important and relevant part of her life. And we see Haley's sister, but we don't see her fucking mother. Where's her fucking mother in all of this, y'all?
In the backyard, like, area of the reception, Hotch and Rossi are talking, and Hotch is like, I broke my promise to Haley. And I was like, bro, like, already we're doing this. Hotch says he does not know if he has the tools to, like, take care of his son. And basically, it sounds like he's just gonna, like, package and ship Jack away to go live with his sister-in-law. So the BAU gets a call, and yes, they have to go to work tonight. So they, like, depart the funeral. And my question was, like, I know that this is a job that you're, like, I guess on call for, but are they allowed to go into work if they have consumed alcohol?
Canonically, yes.
Because that means that you are potentially going to be handling firearms while under the influence.
You're no fun.
No, I was just, like, genuinely curious, like, because I know, like, with firemen or firefighters, like, you would have, like, 2 days on call and then, like, a day off or vice versa or something like that. So when you're on call, like, it means that you can sit around and basically do nothing, but I'm guessing you're not allowed to, like, you know, consume substances during when you're on call.
But Abigail, no other team is available. They have to go.
Okay, well, I know it's a TV show, but, like, I'm just actually curious. I'm, like, genuinely curious, like, what the protocols are. So next, we're on the BAU jet.
Hey, girl.
And JJ tells them about how, like, in this case, there have been 2 women dead in 2 weeks.
2 women dead in 2 weeks, both killed in their own homes, no sign of forced entry. The floors were covered in rose petals.
Quite the romantic. Evidence of sexual assault?
None. Both women were last seen leaving their offices on a Friday and never showed up to work on a Monday.
It's Thursday. Why are we only being called in now?
Second body was only found yesterday.
There may be a socioeconomic pattern emerging. The first victim, Bethany Heminger, lived in Belmead. Melissa Johnson and Brentwood, both are affluent neighborhoods.
Yet there was nothing missing from either home.
What did these women do for a living?
Bethany was a defense attorney, Melissa a corporate executive.
2 brunettes with similar features in high-powered professions, that's not a coincidence.
These women most likely represent someone he knows.
All right, so we need to figure out where the Sun Sub is meeting his victims and how he's gaining access to their homes. And if he's staying on pattern, most likely this guy has picked out his next target.
We should check gardeners, housekeeping staff, pool attendants, floral shops, see if anyone worked both homes.
And start working up a paper trail, Garcia. Find out where these women were in the days leading up to each murder.
Like a genie in a bottle. Poof.
So the team arrives in Nashville, and we see JJ meet Landon Kaminsky, who is, like, the local police officer. So now we're at the crime scene. This is Johnson. The woman's last name is Johnson. Apparently, unfortunately, sadly, I was upset about this. The unsub also killed this woman's dog. Prentice says she probably thought he was protection enough in reference to the pup. And Morgan comes in with this trash-ass victim blaming, saying that was her first mistake. She had all the precautions to avoid home invasion. She just didn't use them properly. And I was like, what the hell, Morgan?
Yeah, super shitty. Also, like, it's because she had a security system she just didn't turn on. And I'm like, sometimes you forget. Also, like, normally a dog and shit would be enough. Like, we later learned that the unsub, like, didn't get in because of the home security system. He had a different way of getting in. So, like, fucking not even relevant.
Also, it sounds like they're living in these really, like, affluent, low-crime neighborhoods. So, like, you may not feel compelled to have one on. The unsub left his prints all over, which would typically indicate that they're disorganized. However, the crime scene itself suggests very organized, given that there are, like, roses and the murder of the dog. Morgan also believes that this unsub was a stranger to the woman because he didn't talk his way in. He was laying in wait. Now we get a shot of the man watching a woman from a car. And the woman getting into her car and driving away, to which I said, ruh-roh. Then at the morgue, Rossi and Reed see the bodies of the 2 women, and they notice that there aren't any ligature marks on either of the victims.
Defensive wounds on both women, more so on the latest victim.
She fought back the hardest.
No ligature marks, they weren't bound.
So how does he keep them from running out?
Maybe he blocked the escape route, or maybe the threat of the knife was enough.
Well, I might be able to answer that. Stab wounds weren't the only injuries.
What do you mean?
Melissa Johnson had a concussion. Bethany Heminger, a broken rib.
An initial assault to prove his dominance. Make sure they're too scared to try and escape.
Something else you should see.
Both their stomach contents were the same. Chicken, broccoli, pasta, salad, and red wine.
He's playing out a fantasy. One he has to control. He sets the scene with flower petals and wine, and then he cooks for them.
Their last supper.
Both of them had the exact same stomach contents. Chicken, broccoli, pasta, salad, and red wine. And it's like, so is he wining and dining them first? And Rossi says he must be playing out a fantasy. The rose petals then take, you know, then he take cooks for them. So a last supper. And I was like, what if they're a vegetarian?
I think you'd have to eat the chicken. I don't think you'd have a
I would be so ill. Oh my God.
Yeah, you would. I mean, maybe that would get you out of it. But I think in that sort of situation, whatever it is, you know.
So back at the crime scene, Prentice shares how it isn't just a fantasy or routine, it's proper etiquette. She notices that there are handprints on both of the chairs at the dinner table, meaning he pulled out the chair for the lady, poured her wine, cleaned up after the meal, and drew her a bath.
What a gentleman, excuse me.
I know, I was like, you know what? I should be wine and dine and taken on a date like this.
But the best thing is that it's in her house. He cooks for her in her house. Like, listen.
I'm like, did he buy all the ingredients?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He had that shit ready to go in a cooler in his car. He's organized, Abigail, remember?
He took the cooler from the eye guy and he's filling it up with his chicken and broccoli.
My house was broken into by this man. I would simply allow it to happen.
I would be like, would you mind cleaning too? What was it, bestie? I can't keep defending you.
Oh, I didn't even tell anyone about that. I or did I not?
No, I don't think you told me.
I received an anonymous submission on my Tumblr where someone was like, bestie, I can't keep defending you. And I was like, who the fuck is this? I don't fucking know you. I don't post hate on Tumblr because I just don't do it. But like inwardly, I'll get really upset. But this one was just so funny. I was like, what are you talking about? I don't know who you are. Like, you can block people who are anonymous and then you'll see who it is. But I was like, no, let's just leave it a mystery. Bestie, I can't keep defending you. Like, it is the funniest ask I've ever received. They were hurt by me, Abigail. I hurt them.
I remember, like, the hot minute when I actively used Tumblr back in high school, and I posted this one, like, image series of someone, like, photoshopping Jesus into, like, different scenarios, and I got a, like... I got a message from someone who was like, how dare you do this? This is so insensitive. Like, you should not be using, like, the Lord's image in vain. And I was like, I'm 15.
Anyways, follow my blog, link in the bio.
All right, so basically, something changed upstairs. Likely, they're suspecting this change happened while she's in the tub because she's the most vulnerable in the tub, and that is when the fear will, like, really kick in and they might try to do something to escape or, like, lash out. So back in Nashville, JJ has gone over all of the people who were employed at the homes of these different victims.
Find anything?
Several people had access to each home. Housekeeper, gardener, pool cleaner, dog walker, each with their own key and an alibi to match.
Any crossover?
None. We even vetted delivery people and utility workers.
Garcia, do you have anything?
There's no hits on the prints at all, but I did what Sir Derek there asked, and I created a paper trail. There's no crossover between the two victims themselves in the weeks leading up to their murders, but they did run in similar circles.
How do you mean?
Well, they both had country club memberships, though to different clubs. They went to upscale restaurants, private concert venues, posh hotels. They enjoyed a high-class, highfalutin lifestyle, an expensive one.
A lifestyle he fit right into. This guy is educated, intelligent, proper. He's a downright gentleman.
The rose petals sent a pretty specific message. He's romancing them whether they want it or not, and he's got the social skills to back it up.
Hey, Garcia, take a look at dating services and social networking sites. Look for working professionals and privileged elite.
Check, check, and checkers. Back in a smidge.
We need more.
Have you figured out how he's getting into these homes?
No sign of forced entry anywhere. Yet he's still gaining access to their homes long before the victims ever get home from work. I mean, this guy needs time to cook and set up his scene. He's either got a key or he can move through walls.
We need fresh eyes.
All right, listen up. I want everybody to go back to the hotel and try to get some rest. We're going to have to pick this up again in the morning.
Morgan tells everyone to go to the hotel and try to sleep, to which Prentice is like, "We're giving up?" And they're like, "No, everyone just needs to go to sleep." Cut. And now we see our unsub romancing the woman from earlier. And when I say romancing, I mean, like, you know, terrorizing. So she tries to escape, but he grabs her and threatens her and asks for, quote, a little appreciation. So she complies, and he suddenly is like, "Okay, no biggie. It's fine. It's time to draw your best." Back with Hotch, Chief Strauss pays him a visit, and she asks after Jack. And she says she wants to discuss something with Hotch.
So, how are you holding up?
I'm okay.
And how's Jack?
He's coping. I don't think he fully understands everything that's going on.
Oh, right. Well, how could he?
You said that there was something you wanted to discuss with me.
Yes, I do.
This is retirement.
I've talked with the director. Given the circumstances, there's no reason you should have to return to the Bureau. We can offer you full pension and benefits.
Are you saying that you want me to leave the PAU?
Well, obviously that's your choice, but I'm offering you a way out. Agent Morgan's promotion was temporary, but he's exceeded our expectations, and I'm confident that I could make it permanent if you decide to step down. The team would be together, and you could be with your son.
And when would you like the decision?
I thought I would be leaving with one. What's your hesitation?
I would just like to weigh all of my options.
Whatever you need.
So, he says he will weigh his options. And now we get the profile.
All right, so this is another stalker. We believe that the unsub is already with his next victim, which we've actually seen. If he matches his pattern, she'll be a successful woman, probably brunette, early 30s to mid 40s. She'll be at home in Nashville's upper echelon. This means that he fits in. He drives the right car, he wears the right clothes, he's highly intelligent, he probably comes from a place of status. He's sociable and endearing. You would never suspect he is capable of murder, but he will take whatever it takes to protect the fantasy he is trying to relive. It's this fantasy that fuels his drive. He is recreating a romantic evening and repeating it with each of his victims. He most likely had a relationship taken away from him, so a loss or a divorce. These women are representations of his first loss. These women were confident, successful, and strong, and they fought back, which means he has the ability to overpower them fairly easily. He believes or fantasizes he is in a relationship with them, no matter how fleeting the initial interaction is. It is everything to him. An invitation. The locations that the women visited prior to their deaths are high-class establishments. The BAU and Abigail wrote Popo are going to want to visit these same places. Look for men that fit this profile, but also women who match this victimology.
Back at the home, we see the lady in the tub. She's reading a newspaper in, like, the weather section out loud to the unsub and asks what he wants to do today.
There are a lot of good movies playing at the Green Hills Mall. Want to go see something?
Thought we'd stay inside today. Maybe watch a DVD.
I want to go on a real date, Joe. Hey, thought after we made love last night, you'd realize how much you mean to me.
So she's like, well, I want to go on a real date. We see them, like, kind of arm in arm, like, walking towards the front door. But before we get there, someone unlocks the door. It's the boyfriend. And he's calling out to her. And we see him lock the door behind him. He calls her phone and sees it's on, like, a small side table in the foyer. He then puts his phone down beside hers and walks down the hall investigating because he can see all, like, the, you know, flower petals and everything. And then we hear her yell, Grant, help! And the unsub steps out with Erica, and the unsub is like, why do you have a key? And Grant tells her to run, and she tries to run towards the door, but it's locked. And I was like, it's just a death, like, just on, okay.
I know, she really struggles with that door, and it's like, it's your house.
We literally don't even see her reach for the lock to unlock it.
Yeah, she just tries it, and she's like, oh, can't do it.
Yeah, and he's like, and so he's like, run upstairs, and I'm like, what kind of bad advice is this? And the unsub somehow has a knife and then just repeatedly stabs Grant in the back, yelling and asking him, like, why he has the key. And then he steps away from Grant, who resembles nothing but Swiss cheese at this point, and is like, Erica, sweetie, why did he have a key? And Erica is just, like, absolutely hysterical at this point. So now we see the BAU roll up to Erica's home. Apparently a UPS guy called it in because he needed them to sign for a package and the front door was wide open and he could see the bodies.
Changed his MO. Multiple stab wounds to the face and neck.
Classic overkill.
And evidence that she had sex before she died.
Forced or consensual?
No evidence of sexual assault.
She played along. She had sex with the unsub because she thought it would keep her alive.
So why didn't it? This kill is personal, angry. She didn't give him everything that he wanted.
What else does he want?
However, Reed has an idea on how they can find more information, this time with their GPSs in their cars. Back with Hotch, he excitedly talks about the fact they're having pancakes for dinner. Because Haley's sister Jessica is there cooking. So Hotch tells Haley's sister about how he was offered retirement. And she tells him, like, that's so wonderful. But then also, like, you know, I can stay with Jack if you, like, want to be away for work. And I'm just like, that's such a huge offer and responsibility to just take on all of a sudden.
She's just a story device, you know, she's just a plot device. So he could stay at work and the viewers won't think poorly of him for it because here's this woman who's just gonna take over as a parent.
Sacrifice your entire life, yeah. So now we see Rossi approach Morgan, and Morgan is like, I'm not going to stand in the way of Hotch's team. And Rossi tells Morgan that Strauss offered him retirement, but Morgan is like, okay, Hotch isn't going to take it. And Rossi's like, he might. He won't let this job take his son away since it took his wife away. And Rossi is all like, it doesn't matter what I think. And I'm like, then why are you having this conversation, Rossi? So Rossi begins to leave, but then Morgan's like, wait, come back. And Morgan talks about how the unsub recently had a loss. But Morgan suggests, like, was it, what if it, like, wasn't literally just only, like, a romantic or sexual thing? What if it was financial independence?
We profiled that our unsub recently experienced a loss as well. A loved one. Probably a brunette who ran in the same circles as his victims.
Right.
What if love wasn't the only loss? I mean, we assumed that because our unsub could so easily navigate our victim's upscale world, that he most likely shared the same financial resources as his victims.
Because of his upbringing, his sophisticated behavior.
But that behavior is ingrained in him. It's habit. It's something he would have learned as a child, not as an adult.
If he didn't have financial independence, but was still trying to keep up his social status, He'd be hemorrhaging funds.
We've been looking at this the wrong way, Rossi. We vetted the maids, the gardeners, the pool cleaners, anyone who had access to the houses, but who else might go unnoticed in a privileged society?
Garcia here.
Garcia, check employee records of each of the venues the victims visited in the week prior to their death. Look for men spending beyond their means.
A guy who's racked up a lot of debt, Garcia.
Look at cars, wardrobes, something that does not fit their current income level. A scholarship-funded private school education, maybe.
At the Botanical Garden, JJ and Reed have a tour, and they learn that there was a corporate fundraiser. And this was, like, the most forced writing I've ever seen. Because JJ is like, oh, wow, like, I guess heels are not, like, a great thing to wear at this venue. And the lady's like, well, actually, most of the people here will hire private valets, so they don't have to trek up the hills in heels. So they're like, oh, it must be a valet driver who's our unsub. And I was like, who would just be like, yeah, I guess you shouldn't wear heels. And they're like, and that's how we find the unsub.
You know what? JJ is really going for it this season. She is using all of her brains to figure it out.
All of her womanly wiles and perspective to track down these killers. Now we have a shot of the unsub working as a valet again. And I guess this makes sense because we saw him in a car the first time. And what I think is funny is that his name is Joe.
Yes.
Yep, Much like Joe Goldberg.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like Joe, the fucking sexy unsub from season 4, episode 2.
Oh my gosh. No, I just thought it was like, he's a stalker and we have a stalker named Joe. We see him in the car after dropping this woman off her valet, and we see him literally go through her GPS and pull out a little notebook and write down, like, beat by beat, the directions to drive to her home. So Garcia then cross-references all the, like, different valet services, and yep, Culpepper Valet is involved in all of the locations involving these victims. So Rossi and Prentice meet with the head of Culpepper, and the manager is quickly able to say, like, oh, Joe Beasler is the unsub. He was engaged recently and had the wedding paid for and everything, but it ended because she was sleeping with the best man. And we also learned that he lost his inheritance, his parents, you know, the down payment for his wedding, and he went to private school and everything. So fits the profile. Morgan and Prentice roll up to the apartment and knock down the door. However, there isn't anyone in the apartment. But something they do find in the apartment is universal garage door openers, which is very creepy. And there's, like, a photo of the wedding, and I'm confused because I thought they didn't have the wedding, but whatever.
Maybe she called it off at the altar, much like in, spoiler, Bridgerton.
Cut, and we see the unsub, like, kick this woman down the stairs and starts, like, absolutely, like, beating her up, which is, like, very different from any of the footage we've seen before. Like,
because he's devolving.
The BAU rolls in and apprehends Joe, and, like, Prentice does this whole, like, holding the gun up to his face and scolding him, and I personally found it really cringy.
You're finally gonna meet your soulmate, Joe, in prison. Only you're not gonna be able to push him around the way you did those women. And when he comes for you, in the middle of the night, when you're least expecting it, you do me a favor. Play along.
She's basically saying, you're gonna get raped. Ha ha. And I'm like, this does not age well at all.
It doesn't. And it also is just, like, it's really cringy. Like, the, like, writing and the delivery. Like, Padgett's, like, a good actress. But, like, I was getting, like, secondhand embarrassment. Like, I couldn't handle it. Because the rest of the team is just, like, standing there watching her do it. And they're like, what a girl boss. Rossi, like, waxes poetical about how the scars remind us of where we have been. Then we see Hotch visiting Haley's grave, which doesn't even have a tombstone yet. It's like a little garden marker. It's very dehumanizing. And Rossi joins him. He's like, I suspected I would find you here. And basically, Rossi is correct in his guess that Hotch is coming back to the team. And I will end this recap on the note of, why do all TV graveyards look exactly the same? Oh, and that's the end of the episode and my really long recap.
Well, girl, listen, I thought really long and hard about what I was going to do for a deep dive. And initially I was looking at like GPS tracking and that kind of stuff. When I look at deep dives, I'm like, what will actually potentially change someone's life in a positive way or bring awareness in a positive way? I'm just going to quickly go through these three stories about how people escaped kidnappings. And like, you know, I just think it's important to share. But in general, if you have a car that has GPS tracking, don't program in your home address. I also don't think that you should, in your phone, you shouldn't have Face ID on, you shouldn't have fingerprint ID on, and you should not have my husband on there, just in case something happens. We're going to try something completely different. We're going to let our hair down, have a little bit of fun, look into my stalking, kidnappy, escape deep dive. This first one is from ABC7. The title is Lincolnwood Woman Rescued from Hostage Situation After Not Returning Wordle Text. Abigail, have you played Wordle?
So I'm dyslexic and I don't need words to be mean to me. So I have not played Wordle. I'm really not good at those kinds of games.
Well, basically, for those that don't know, it's a daily thing done by the New York Times, and you get five guesses, and it's five letters. You guess random words, and it tells you when you have a letter in a correct spot, a letter in an incorrect spot, and when the letter's not even in the word. So you have to kind of guess in five guesses what the word is. So it's very popular with me and then, like, senior citizens. Back to the deep dive. Lincolnwood police said that the online word game Wordle played a role in saving an 80-year-old woman from a hostage situation. They were called to do a wellness check by the 80-year-old woman's daughter on Sunday when her mother failed to text the daily Wordle score. When officers arrived at the home, they found a broken window on the first floor and visible blood. When they entered the home, they found the victim in the basement being held hostage. She was not hurt, investigators said. That's one of them. This is from, it just says news, U.S. News. The title is Girl 11 Who Fought Off Kidnapper Said She Smeared Blue Slime on Him to Help Police. The 11-year-old Florida girl who fought back during an attempted kidnapping earlier this week, said she smeared some of the blue slime she was playing with on the man so that the police could more easily locate the suspect, and the plan worked. Quote, I was able to get the slime onto his upper arm and a little bit on his lower arm, Alyssa told NBC's Today, adding that her fast thinking was inspired by watching Law and Order Special Victims Unit with her mother. And here's my last little fun deep dive about kidnapping. And this is from Bored Panda. And this is, student tricked her kidnapper into giving back her phone, and that brave move probably saved her life. 21-year-old student Jayla Gladen left her apartment in Carlton, Georgia, to go to a Kroger's grocery store. A man in the parking lot reportedly asked for a lighter. She responded she didn't have one. He kept following her. Once she got to her car, he pressed a knife to her throat. They both got in her car, and the attacker turned to Jayla and asked if she knew how to get to Atlanta, which was about 50 miles away. And she said she didn't know how to get there. Basically, she was like, I don't know how to get there. I need the GPS on my phone. So he gave it to her. And then she started texting her boyfriend. And the kidnapper had no idea that she was just texting her boyfriend. She sent her boyfriend her location. And the texts are here. And it's like, he's like, what are you doing in Atlanta? And she's like, I was kidnapped. And then he was like, I'm going to the police station.
Should we rate this episode?
Yes.
Slave of Duty. I'm assuming that's referencing Hotch.
I guess, but like, what's with the title? His wife just died because she was murdered by a serial killer.
Not a huge fan of the title.
But are you a huge fan of Joe?
Yeah.
You think he's hot. He is hot.
It's reminiscent of season one, The Fox, of like forcing the people you're entrapping in their own home and making them play along with your fantasy. I love the dissonance of being like, you're being treated really well until you are not. Like, it's like, you know, like the horror of being like, I'm forcing romancing.
For me, I really like the organized killers that have really specific rituals that are like the same at every crime scene. I don't know. There's just something about that where it doesn't matter who it was. They were going to do the same thing. I don't know. 18, 19, 20. What do you want to give?
Let's give him a 19.
Okay.
All right. Character development and character arcs. I mean, technically we get a lot with Hotch.
I think we should just give script writing a really bad score and just give this a 20 because I really feel that, I just feel that this is a poorly written episode. And if it was written a different way, it would have been a lot more impactful.
Forensics in context. Chicken and pasta.
I guess the thing that I'm stuck on is like the whole key situation and the universal garage remote.
Also, it's like we never really acknowledge the fact about, like, did he not know Erica had a boyfriend?
I think the point was that he didn't stalk them for long. He would follow them home from events and stalk them for a couple days. And it just happened to be the week that her boyfriend, Grant, God rest his soul, was away. So, I mean, I believe that. I'm just like, I don't know. Sometimes they say stuff and I'm like, what the fuck? Like universal garage door remote. Like, I don't know, man. But I like the episode.
Yeah, me too. Okay, for instance, do you want to give it like a 10, 15?
Let's give it a 15 because I really, for script writing, I think we should give it like a 5 because I really think everyone is saying shit that their characters normally wouldn't. I feel like the Hotch thing is not done in a way, like they don't give him a lot to work with, even though they think they do. It's just no good.
Background characters, I thought the like local police was weird, but I really liked Erica.
Yeah, I really liked Erica. I actually think that we should give some points for Strauss because she's turning it around.
Yeah, Strauss is like coming through.
I know. I'm a big Strauss stan, to be honest with you. 17, 18.
Yeah, let's do 17. 76.
Listening, we have a website where we have all of our recaps posted with pictures and all of our deep dives where you can follow the links so you can follow along as you watch. Follow us on the podcast on all the things, and if you want to be my bestie and then be let down by me, you can follow me yournewapartment.tumblr.com.
You can follow me between Stage and Screen Podcast and all streaming services and Instagram.
Well, thanks so much for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.